I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We continue with Rob Bradford and Baseball Isn't Boring on WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Isn't Boring. We're live from Dodger Stadium. I'm Rob Bradford. Gordo, back in the Baseball Isn't Boring studios in Brighton. Gordo, say hello.
You think when they were right, when the script, like the band that does that song, do you think when they wrote that song, they knew what they were doing?
In what sense?
In the sense that, like,
that they would play for Joe Castiglione one day?
yeah, specifically Joe Castiglione. And, like, every Hall of Fame, and obviously they're going to play the song. But do you think they knew what they were doing?
No, I think
they were just writing a song.
Friend of the brand, Baseball Isn't Boring brand, Noah Kahn. I heard he put on two good shows at Fenway. Can you confirm or deny or what?
So I live pretty close by. When I'm taking the dog out, I could hear it, and the people seem to be enjoying it. I could hear fans. I heard good things. I knew people that went.
The concert, I would wonder, in, I don't know if you've been in your place long enough to know this answer. The concerts at Fenway, which show has the most outside the park effect? In other words, what you could hear the most, that you can feel the most, whatever it is. Because I remember when Green Day played, they told everyone to jump and down, up and down at the same time. And people were saying it felt like an earthquake.
Really?
Yeah,
so. I wonder what that effect would be at Fenway specifically.
That was at Fenway. That was my point.
Right, no, I'm saying, like, just if you, because I wasn't there to feel it, but, like.
Yeah.
If, like, but, compare it from Fenway to, I don't know, some football stadium built in the last 10 years. Fenway Park, I wonder how equipped it is to take an entire crowd of people jumping up and down at the exact same time. The elevator jump.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And
here at Dodger Stadium, and we can get more into the Red Sox and the Dodgers and what's coming up, and obviously first pitch with Tyler Murray and Lou Maloney. I have the pregame show leading up to that. We're going to be on for another hour with you here, the Baseball Isn't Boring show, here at Dodger Stadium after the game. So they told everybody, they told the media, say, listen, the players are getting out of here. Like, if you watched Cora on Nesson last night, he was already dressed, which has never, ever happened. It's because they were having a drone show. And so they were letting people in the outfield, and traffic is already a mess here. It's not a lot of ways in and out. But they had the drone. And I was introduced to the drone show actually last week at the All-Star game after the draft, and that was pretty impressive. I got to be honest with you.
Do they make, like, pictures in the sky with lighting up drones? What did they put for the draft one?
It was like a huge American flag. It was a huge baseball. It's one of these things where you wonder, how do they do that? And then the Dodgers did it last night. It's much better than fireworks. I got to be honest with you. It's much better than fireworks. Probably a lot more expensive as well. But as I said, we're here at Dodger Stadium. A quick note is about something that people on Twitter were wondering about, which I had to get to the bottom of, which was the Red Sox schedule release.
You know this? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, they pulled it.
Yeah, so there was, like, I saw some crazy theories about why they pulled it, and Tristan Casas unfollowing the Red Sox and this and that. Because in case
I didn't hear that part. He unfollowed the Red Sox.
I don't know. I don't know if it's true. Like, it's like a wave of people on Twitter /X.
You take my release video down.
I mean, who knows? I mean, who knows? You can't rule anything out. But in case people didn't see it, it was – everyone does these teams do these schedule release things, which are awesome. I love them. It's great. It's adds some spice to the otherwise mundane schedule release. But the Red Sox did one where Tristan Casas is sitting in the outfield doing his meditation, and then looking at, they're announcing the different teams, and he's looking up and imagining going to these different places. He's visualizing it. And I think they put it on TikTok. And then maybe it was on Instagram. But anyway, it got taken down pretty quick. And so people were like, well, what happened? And so I got to the bottom of it. Turns out that there was a copyright issue somewhere in it, and everyone immediately jumped to it. I don't know. I can't confirm or deny it was the Meet the Mets.
It has to be the Meet the
Mets.
Yeah,
right?
That's the only thing it could be.
Yeah, right? So
all the other stuff was like tiger noises. It's like,
yeah, so
the
takeaway is that when the Red Sox play the Mets, there's some payback. Okay, you aren't gonna let it, I mean, come on, let's go. Don't give us a copyright infringement stuff. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Wait, so okay, here's how you can really get the Mets back. If you're really mad at the Mets, you want to know how you can get them back? They want Juan
trade
Soto.
Trade for JD Martinez.
Okay, well that too, but they really want Juan Soto this offseason, Rob.
Yeah, sign Juan Soto?
Yeah, just take away their guy.
All right, so that perfectly leads into one of the many conversations I had at All-Star Week, and this was with Teoscar Hernandez. And I'm going to play you Teoscar Hernandez. This is what he's talking about, the Red Sox pursuit. I had never talked to Teoscar Hernandez before, and I found him delightfully honest. Okay, here you go. Here's Teoscar Hernandez.
Seems like there was really the Red Sox and Dodgers, right? That would be fair to say.
At the end, yes.
At the end.
Yeah.
And I know that it was different offers. I mean, the Red Sox were, was it?
2 years.
2 years.
2 years, 28.
Okay. If they would go three, would you have done it?
Obviously, I was not going to go and spend my free agency, you know, and trying to get a bad deal.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I love the Red Sox, and it was one of my favorite teams.
And you love playing at Fenway.
And I love playing in there. But at the end of the day, I have to make what is best for me in my career and my family.
Did you feel like you were going to be able to get that third year from?
At the end, honestly, I thought that they were going to make it. But unfortunately, they say they have to wait because they have to make some move and all that stuff. And I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait any longer.
You probably looked at their roster, right, and say, well, this is what I would be going to?
Yeah, I mean, it just the way they approach the free agency. Teams that want to win, they spend. They go after good players. I'm not saying they don't have good players, because they do. The Red Sox are really good right now, and they had amazing players. But it just, for my part, I just want to go to a team that it's looking for everybody that is good to win, to spend. That they're not afraid to spend and to go after good players so they can make their team better.
All right, spoiler alert, the Red Sox could use Teoscar Hernandez right now. And they're having a good year. That's fine. Teoscar Hernandez, I don't know if you know this, he was an All-Star. He also was a home run derby champ. Gordo, I want to get your reaction to that conversation, but we got to trend first. So this is the Baseballs and Boring Show. I'm Rob Bradford, live from Dodger Stadium, getting ready for the huge, huge game, biggest game of the year, no question about it. Gordo is back in the Baseballs and Boring Studios in Brighton. Zach behind the glass, and Zach, the aforementioned Zach, is now going to trend.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox fell to the Dodgers last night, 4-1, your final from L.A. A Jaren Duran solo shot in the fifth put the Sox up 1-0 until a Freddie Freeman grand slam in the bottom of the eighth put the Dodgers up for good. They'll look to bounce back tonight when Brian Baio takes the mound opposite Justin Robleski for the Dodgers. You can catch our coverage of that game starting at 6:15 with Rob Bradford on the MassMutual pregame show. Then Tyler Murray and Lou Maloney will have the call of the game from Dodger Stadium. First pitch at 7:15 on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. It's Hall of Fame weekend in Major League Baseball. Joe Mauro of the Twins, Todd Helton of the Rockies, and former manager of the Tigers and Pirates, Jim Leland, will all be inducted alongside our very own Joe Castiglione, who did receive the Ford C. Frick Award for broadcasting excellence. Congratulations to Joe. Patriots rookies reported for training camp yesterday. They'll be joined by the veterans on July 23rd. Their first practice is set for the following day, July 24th. Over in Vegas, the Summer Celtics fell to the Mavs 101-90 last night. Eddie House's son Jalen led the way for the Celtics with 18 points. They'll have one final game tomorrow afternoon at 5 p.m. when they face off with the Philadelphia 76ers ahead of the Summer League playoffs. My name is Zach Coe. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More baseball isn't boring coming up after this.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Make a habit of it.
Brad Foe and Baseball Isn't Boring. WEEI.
All right, welcome back to the Baseball Isn't Boring show. I'm Rob Bradford, live from Dodger Stadium. Gordo, Play Tessie podcast.
What's up, what's
play,
up?
At Play Tessie. Give your Twitter / X handle, Gordo.
Twitter, at X, at Boss Sports Gordo, Boston Sports Gordo, BOS Sports Gordo.
There's nobody better to follow for knowing what's going on. And, of course, Zach behind the glass, and there's a lot going on. So we are going to play in just a few minutes, in about 9 minutes. We're going to play the whole Joe Castiglione a speech from Cooperstown. I think that he deserves that. We deserve that. I think it's the right thing to do. As Ken Laird, Kerosene Ken Laird, boots on the ground, Ken Laird told us from Cooperstown, a cavalcade of stars were in Cooperstown and supporting Joe and hearing this speech firsthand. But we want to give it to you, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. I've been looking forward to hearing Gordo ever since we did the first spring training game. And that first spring training game, I said, "Oh, Joe, you got your speech," and he already. I mean, I got to get it down to 10 minutes. And then he just gave up, and I think he's like 13 or 14 minutes. You went to the Ortiz induction in Cooperstown, right?
Yeah, that one, you say Cooperstown is nice and cool compared to L.A. That one was a million degrees.
Yeah, and so I got to be honest with you. Not a huge fan of the ceremonies. Like, not a huge fan. Listen, this is all about honesty. We love the great game of baseball. We love the Hall of Fame. We love the Joe thing is worth going to because I think it was inside. It was separate. But that thing, Gordo, the Ortiz thing, and they're rattling off. I think they had like seven or so inductees.
Yeah, that was a lot.
And they put everybody in a field. It's impossible to get any water at all. It's like
you got to be prepared.
It's really not a healthy thing where, as we know, the demographic of baseball typically leans older, and you're putting them in this field, and
How much of your opinion here on that has to do with the fact that, A, Cooperstown is really hard to get to? You know, let's start there. How much of it is getting to it, and how much of it, because we parked pretty close to the venue, which I think was a mistake. We basically sat in the parking lot waiting to get out for about 50 to 60 minutes before we could actually get out. I don't know what you're probably seasoned vet at this point, but how much?
I had never been to that before the Ortiz thing.
Okay, then that part of my question stands. How much?
Yeah.
Like, is it a lot because of that? Like, if these ceremonies were, I don't know, 20 minute drive, you know, air conditioned, like.
No,
what's
I'm
your
just,
thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it would be better. I mean, like I said, I can't lie that it's painful. Like, it's painful, and I took great umbrage with I go to the bathroom and walk through the crowd in the middle of it. Like I said, there was I applaud everyone who was inducted, but there's different levels of the inductees, right? Some people you haven't even heard of. And so I go to the bathroom, and halfway through, there's A-Rod, like, walking in. Like, not only walking in halfway through, but walking in, and because he's walking in and going to one of the, like, the attention from whoever's speaking on the stage is totally taken by A-Rod. It was such, like, I had such a problem with that whole dynamic. But to me, Gordo, it's still, you go, I wish I could be there for Joe today. You go to honor these people who have given you such great memories. But for me, really, I would probably also sullied by the fact that my Hall of Fame experience that year, that David Ortiz year, was already defined. In May, Ian Brown and I were very, very fortunate to be invited by Ortiz to accompany him for his private tour of the Hall of Fame, which, holy mackerel, absolutely one of the highlights of my professional career, where you're walking through, he's getting a chance to see all this stuff for the first time. I'm sitting next to, they play a 15-minute video of Hall of Famers talking. I'm sitting right next to him, and I'm looking over, and he's getting emotional about it. He's holding Babe Ruth's at bat. There's David Ortiz holding Babe Ruth's at bat. I mean, the entire thing was incredible. So to answer your question, I had already been through that. on a rainy day in May. So everything else was like, okay, I'm here. But, you know, it's still, it's the Hall of Fame. It's worth going to.
You were a lucky guy to be able to do that.
Oh, don't think that I don't know it. Yeah,
that's crazy.
That is.
I don't even want to call it a once in a lifetime experience, because that's just like an experience that only few can really get.
And the weird thing is, so it's a private tour, but there was this random high school baseball team that just happened to be like, I don't know, showing up at just the right time, and they let this high school baseball team take this tour with Dave Ruth.
Really?
Yeah. So it was. It's crazy. It's a great thing. It's absolutely a great thing. And so I encourage everyone to go to the Hall of Fame. Just understand. And Ken Laird had talked about this when he called. If you want to hear Ken's take on it, obviously go to the Odyssey app to check that out. But he has a 7-year-old daughter. And Gordo, I want to get your take on this. When it comes to the Hall of Fame, it is definitely more of a museum than probably a lot of these Hall of Fames. The Hockey Hall of Fame stinks, by the way. It's like in the mall. It's terrible.
Yeah, I've been to that one, too. It's weird. It's weird.
No, it's just awful. It's not even worth going to.
I feel the same way about the basketball one, though. You're talking – I know
the
it's
basketball
like kid-friendly, but...
Well, they try to be more interactive. They try to do more interactive stuff.
There's just not very much there.
No. I mean, baseball of all sports, it's built on history, I think, more than anything. Or people relish the history of baseball. More than any of the other sports. It's the same thing with football. Football is about the here and the now, right?
Yeah.
And so, and you have the Hall of Fame game and everything else, but still, if you go to the Baseball Hall of Fame, you got to be ready. You have to understand this is a museum, and which is great, because museums can be awesome, but you have to have patience. And for a 7-year-old, it's going to be tough. It's just going to be tough. Just understand that.
Yeah, and well, I've been to the Hall of Fame a few times now, and I've done it in different stages of my life. So when I went for the first time, I must have been 9 years old, and I've been a baseball nut since I was a little kid. But even as like a baseball nut, if you're 9 years old, you only have so much patience for standing around. You can only have so much appreciation for the history of the game and everything that's there. My experience there as a kid compared to when I went for the second time as like a middle schooler, and then definitely when I went during the Ortiz weekend, completely different experiences. And as you get older, you have more of an appreciation. You have more patience to stand and understand what you're looking at, what you're experiencing. It's just, it's very different.
All right, so speaking of which, we are going to give everybody the opportunity to hear the aforementioned Joe Castiglione speech from Cooperstown. We are very fortunate to get it. Again, Kerosene Ken Laird on Boots on the Ground. He set the scene for us. Now we get to hear exactly what happened with Joe Castiglione's speech in Cooperstown today.
Thank you very much, Jane, for all you and the Hall of Fame staff have done for me over the last 7 months. Congratulations to the Fraley family and the class of 2024, whom I was so privileged to cover. Jim Leland, Joe Mauer, Todd Helton, and Adrian Beltre, who had a great season for the Red Sox in 2010. As I stand here, I think of St. Luke, chapter 1, verse 37. For with God, nothing shall be impossible. I never thought this award would be possible with so many worthy candidates, and I'm honored to have been selected by previous winners. I've had so many connections to Cooperstown. The late Bill Guilfoyle, Vice President of the Hall of Fame, who along with sports writer Bill Christine, introduced me to covering Major League Baseball when Mr. Guilfoyle was Media Relations Director of those great Pirate teams of Clemente and Stargell. My hometown friend, George Grand, who emceed many player inductions here. George presented me with a beautiful Hall of Fame jacket the very next day after my election. And his late brother, Carl Grant, a great broadcaster in New Haven, advised me and hired me as a public address announcer for the New Haven Wonderette softball team at the age of 19. And my dear friend, Jeff Idelson, our intern and broadcast statistician in the 80s, who went on to become president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, making us so proud. Josh Rowitz, the current president, who along with Vice President John Shestakowski called to inform me of this honor. I tried to put the call on speakerphone, but instead of hitting the white button, I hit the red button. Yes, I hung up on the Hall of Fame. It was a long 30 seconds till they called back. And thanks to Shuster's predecessor, Brad Horn, and his wife, Whitney, who, along with Pam Kent of the Red Sox, have been our guiding lights for this weekend. My first hope was to be Mickey Mantle, but as Frick Award winner Ernie Harwell used to say, I wanted to be a ball player in the worst way, and that's exactly how I played. But I think broadcasting baseball has always been my true vocation, guided from above. My late dad, Dr. Frank, a dermatologist and father of eight, hit me fungos, taught me to read the box scores, and had me listen to the great Mel Allen, who would become my broadcast hero. I would pretend to be Mel and announce my own fungo games in the backyard. The neighbors thought I was crazy. Dad and Uncle Charlie seldom missed a broadcast. One night, Dad and my mom, who's listening today, were attending a drama at the Schubert Theater in New Haven. Dad was also listening to our game on his headset. Somehow his earpiece got disconnected and my home run call was heard at a critical moment in the production throughout the theater. I got my start 50 miles from here, Colgate University, broadcasting Colgate football and basketball, and on the college radio station and spinning the hits of the 60s as Joey C. the Big Cheese. What an honor it is to have President Brian Casey here today and others from our Colgate family. My first professional experience was due to the kindness of a wonderful broadcaster named Lloyd Walsh, who called Colgate football for 37 years on WRUN in Utica. Lloyd knew how tough it was to get that first professional job on the resume, so he'd switch places with me in the third quarter and let me work on his professional station. Lloyd covered many great athletes here in Central New York, including a great tennis player from Rome, New York, named Rob Manfred. Yes, the commissioner of baseball. Colgate basketball led me to another mentor, the late Bill O'Donnell. After we both broadcast Colgate's triple overtime loss to Syracuse in 1965, me on the college station and Bill on WSYR, I accidentally started to walk off with Bill's gloves on a frigid night, and that's how we met. Bill soon joined Frick winner Chuck Thompson in the Baltimore Orioles booth, and he would critique my tapes and inform me of job opportunities. After working as a DJ and newsman and staff announcer in Connecticut, Western Mass, and Syracuse, I made the most important move of my life when I went to Youngstown, Ohio to be a TV sports anchor. There, I replaced Chuck Tanner, who did the sports during the off seasons when he was a minor league manager. But then Chuck was hired to manage the Chicago White Sox, and I got his TV job, where I made $140 a week. I also got an extra $15 for play-by-play of high school and Youngstown State sports. And when I asked the boss if I could have a color analyst, he said, sure, as long as you share your $15 fee. I did the games alone. Going to Youngstown was a life-changing move because I met a third-grade teacher named Janice Lowry. On our very first date, Jan was to keep stats at a high school basketball game. But no one ordered a broadcast line for us, so we never got on the air. We had the night to ourselves. We fell in love, and 364 days later, we were married. We'll celebrate our 53rd anniversary in November, thanks to Jan, who ran the house, sacrificed so much for my career, and raised three great kids. Joe Jr., known as Duke, a TV sports anchor for 20 years in New York City, and now in his sixth year as sports director at Channel 5 in Boston, and Kiki, his bride of 25 years. Dr. Tom, who followed in his grandfather's footsteps and practices internal medicine south of Boston, and his wife of 24 years, Rachel. And daughter Kate, a marketing executive, and her husband Mike Romano. They actually had the 2004 World Series trophy at their wedding rehearsal dinner. As former Writers Award winner Dan Shaughnessy says, everything in life comes back to the Red Sox. All three kids grew up at Fenway Park and worked concession, security, and first aid in the clubhouse. Duke, a catcher at Stonehill College, got on-field instruction at Fenway from Tony Pena. And Johnny Pesky hit both boys hundreds of ground balls. Kate would count pitches for our broadcast as a 7-year-old and later got help with her Spanish from Pedro Martinez when she was a student at Boston College. They loved to go with me to record the pregame shows with the affable general manager, Lou Gorman, who always had treats or souvenirs. I would take each kid on a road trip, and they would join manager Joe Morgan for pizza in his hotel suite after night games. Like their parents, all six grandchildren, Jane, Tila, Anna, Joey, Thomas, and Charlie, are regulars at Fenway Park and never want me to leave. They got to ride in the World Series duck boats and have been photographed with and hugged by Big Poppy, who was just as great with fans as he was hitting in the clutch. My first baseball job came in 1979 on Cleveland Indians TV, hired by Bill Flynn, who took a chance on a guy with no MLB experience. I worked with the late Fred McLeod, who went on to a great career in the NBA, and I made many lifetime friends that season, including my dear friend and spiritual coach of almost 50 years, Andre Thornton, who has a record that can never be broken, most home runs in the history of Cleveland's old municipal stadium. A strike-shortened season on pay TV in Milwaukee was next, thanks to Brewers owner and future commissioner Bud Selig and broadcast director Bill Hague, and there were four Hall of Famers on that team. And then it was back to Cleveland Cable TV, where I worked games with Rapid Robert Bob Feller, who played catch with my kids and came to their birthday parties. And it was in Cleveland where I worked in TV with the late Casey Coleman, who told me his father Ken needed a radio partner for the 1983 season. Thanks to Ken, I was hired on that one-year contract. Ken encouraged me, gave me some advice, which I still follow. He said, "You'll see a lot of failure over a long season. After all, a good hitter fails 7 out of 10 at-bats. So keep that in mind before you criticize a player." Ken also introduced me to his passion, the Jimmy Fund of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where I succeeded him in a speakers and fundraising role. There were many heartbreaking but also heartwarming stories I shared with patients and players, especially with Red Sox Hall of Famer Mo Vaughn, a true leader on and off the field. Ernie Harwell, another great broadcaster and Christian gentleman, set a tone on how to pay it forward with his kindness to interns and young broadcasters like me. His example was a big reason I taught a broadcast course for 29 years at Northeastern University and 12 years at Franklin Pierce U. My students included Don Orsillo, now TV voice of the San Diego Padres, Leslie Sterling, the first female public address announcer in the American League, who left for a higher calling. She is now an Episcopal priest. And former baseball executive Glenn Wilbur, now with CBS News, three-time Olympic hockey star Kendall Coyne, and many other kids looking for an easy grade. Bob Starr, who called himself the burly broadcaster, followed Ken Coleman. He taught me how to laugh and not to take wins and losses so seriously. He had a saying, "It's not my life and it's not my wife." Well, I didn't always heed his advice. One night in Chicago, the Red Sox were down a run, two out in the ninth, tying run at third, go-ahead run at second. Jody Reed hits a line drive, hit it for center field, but the pitcher jumps up and catches it. Game over, Red Sox lose, and burly Bob starts laughing. "Sorry, fans," he said. "I know it was a tough loss, but my partner is all hunched over here, looking like he's been harpooned." I've had other great broadcast partners over my career. Jerry Trupiano for 14 years, highlighted by the greatest comeback of all time in the 2004 championship. My great friend Dave O'Brien for 9 years, with whom we shared the 2007 World Championship and 2013 Boston Strong Championship, and many good times on the road. Tim Neverett for 3 years, who helped me off the floor when I went head over heels and fell out of my chair while describing Andrew Benintendi's game-saving catch at Houston in the 2018 ALCS. And Will Fleming, an outstanding broadcaster and friend, who is taking the baton with grace and style. I also enjoyed working with Sean McDonough, Lou Maloney, Glenn Geffner, John Risch, Rob Bradford, Dale Arnold, Flash Gordon, Mario Mpemba, and Josh Lewin. You certainly need the support of your employers to last 42 years. Both Red Sox ownership groups, the Yawkey Trust, John Harrington has been so kind to my family, and Haywood Sullivan, and the Fenway Sports Group, John Henry, Tom Werner, Mike D, President Sam Kennedy, Colin Birch, and the late Larry Lucchino, a great leader, whom I think deserves a plaque in Cooperstown for building ballparks and champions. I thank them for their loyalty and for giving us competitive teams to broadcast, and of course, 4 world championships in 15 years. And those front office friends who've been so helpful, especially the late Jack Rogers and Dick Bresciani. I thank the 16 managers who've been so trusting and cooperative, especially my dear friend Joe Morgan, who still teaches me baseball at the tender age of 93. Joe, thanks for coming today. The coaches like Lynn Jones, Victor Rodriguez, DeMarlo Hale, and so many more. And the scouts who analyze the talent through their judgment and experience. The late Grover Deacon Jones, T-Bone Giordano, Ed DeRemio, and Bob Schaefer. I've been privileged to cover so many great players. Imagine you have Roger Clemens and Pedro Martinez on the mound every fifth day for 20 of my first 22 years with the Red Sox. When the Red Sox named the radio booth for me in my 40th year, the Rocket flew up from Texas to present me with a plaque, a true and loyal friend. I'll be here in Cooperstown someday when Roger's inducted. Same for Dwight Evans and Louis Tiant. 10 years ago, I was elected to the Red Sox Hall of Fame, and what made it even more special was going in with Pedro Martinez, the most charismatic athlete I've known, along with David Ortiz, Roger Clemens, and Nomar Garciaparra, who was headed to Cooperstown till injuries intervened. We were all on the mound to throw out a first pitch, and Roger said, "Let's throw in the count of three." I threw on two, so my pitch would get there when theirs did. And I had the best defensive center fielder I've ever seen, Jackie Bradley Jr., catch my pitch, because Jackie catches everything. I'm so honored to see so many of my old friends here, and regretfully, Brian and Kim Daubach, Trot and Catherine Nixon, and Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League Museum, couldn't make it because of the airline situation. But it's great to see Rich, Caitlin, and Bryce Hill, Dennis and Jennifer Eckersley, Jim and Kareen Rice, and Mike Lowell, the 2007 World Series MVP, here with his son Anthony and his dad, Dr. Carl. I'm grateful to broadcast management, Jack Campbell and Jane Day, Steve Dodge and Brad Murray of American Radio, and Mike Thomas, Mark Hannon, and Ken Laird of Odyssey. Thanks to the salesmen, especially Dana Panapinto, the interns, our wonderful engineer of 25 years, Doug Lane, and my co-authors, Doug Lyons, who wrote both of my books. He did all the heavy lifting. And his friend, my friend, and his brother, the New York movie critic Jeffrey Lyons, who says we are brothers from another mother. And my agent, Steve Fryer, who keeps me going. And most of all, to the passionate fans of Red Sox Nation for their trust and their loyalty. I know they appreciate my passion because many have told me they can tell the Red Sox are winning or losing by the tone of my voice. I really had so much fun with Red Sox baseball. But thanks to a Jesuit priest named John Dillon Day, I came to realize the responsibility involved. Monsignor Day told me, what you have is an apostolate, because you bring light and joy to the elderly and the shut-ins who plan their whole day around your broadcast, the overlooked demographic. At my 50th college reunion, a classmate said to me, you're the one guy who did exactly what he said he wanted to do. What a blessing. This honor caps the many blessings I've had, and the catchphrase fits so well. Can you believe it? Thank you so much.
All right. Joe absolutely nailed it. Correct, Gordo? Correct?
Absolutely.
That was great.
It was beautiful.
That was great.
It was exactly the way it should have been delivered from him, too. It was very, I mean, he just comes off as such a genuine, appreciative guy, and obviously made it about everyone but himself, but that you wouldn't expect it any other way.
Yeah, that isn't hard to do, to summarize all that and get all those names in there.
Including yours.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I just told you one of my career highlights. That also is one of my career highlights, absolutely. So I appreciate that. We're going to have the whole speech up on the Baseball Isn't Boring Count a little bit later. But we're storming on into the pregame show. That is Gordo of the Playtesting Podcast, Zach behind the glass. I'm Rob Bradford, live from Dodger Stadium. We're going to give you all kinds of momentum. It's a big game. It's a big day, not only because of the stuff at Cooperstown, but because the Boston Red Sox are looking to do what they do so well, which is win after losing on Friday. All right, we'll talk about it. Coming back right after this.
Don't be left out. Baseball isn't boring on WEEI.
Boston's sports original.
California. All right, let's go. Home stretch. Baseball's a boring show. We're with you every single Saturday. I love it. And I'm so honored and so privileged to have Gordo of the Playtessie podcast alongside. Gordo, you feel
beautiful
good?
Beautiful day for baseball, as
is
always.
What is the weather in Boston like right now?
I spent the early afternoon at the pool. It's like mid-80s. I mean, it was supposed to be kind of cloudy, but it's pretty much been sunny the whole day. Pretty perfect.
Well, I can tell you this. The Los Angeles weather amazes me. And I know that you have some grayness, I guess, in May or June. But I tell you what. It is unbelievable how you come out here and it's the same weather every single time. It's a little hotter. It's a little hotter. The one time, Gordo, which I did not get the typical L.A. weather, was a game in Anaheim. I think it was one of the only rainouts they ever had. They had a rainout, and then that day they brought in the helicopter. They brought in a helicopter to dry the field because I don't know if they had a tarp, but a helicopter lands in the field.
So what? It just doesn't rain?
It never rains. Never rains.
So how did? Oh, you know what? I do hear about these California droughts. I guess that's a thing.
This is quite a scene here, and I mean, just looking down the field, Kenley Jansen is a man of the people. I mean, he has been holding court. The fans, the Dodgers teammates, it's a whole scene. It's a whole scene. Which it was interesting because I was talking to some Dodgers people about Kenley, and they said it'll be interesting to see the reception that he gets. Because when he left here, it wasn't really great. It wasn't going great for Kenley. And
Are you talking about on the field or with the organization?
Yeah, I mean, just sort of the perception of him, and the perception of that he hadn't really been that lockdown closer that they wanted. He goes back to the World Series. He didn't close out the World Series, as we know. But I do think that this is a guy who has evolved and landed in a pretty good place. And as we talked about before, Gordo, the trade deadline, I think this is going to be the most interesting part of the trade deadline, Kenley Jansen. What do you say? What say you, Gordo, about where Kenley Jansen on July 30th at 6 o'clock, let's say 6 o'clock, July 30th, I think the deadline's at 4, July 30th, which, by the way, it's a little bit earlier this year.
Why is that?
I don't know. I have no idea. But it is. And so where on that time and day will Kenley Jansen be?
Kenley Jansen will be with the Red Sox, and to me there's really no doubt in my mind. If you wanted to get cute with it, you could have made an argument for it, and I entertained the argument for the whole buy-sell thing a couple weeks ago, but at this point, it really doesn't even have as much to do with the Red Sox position in the standings. They're in a wild card spot. They're playing such good baseball. If you want to look at the playoff odds, they've been riding at or above 50%, but to me, it's about the state of the bullpen with the injuries they have.
Last night was an eye opener. I mean, last night was an eye opener. Not because, listen, Freddie Freeman's going to give up. He's going to hit his home runs. Shohei Ohtani, he hits one down the line, whatever. But last night was an eye opener because you said it before, Gordo, about we were all looking at the lineup, how this was setting up and what they were going to do. And I'm looking at it as like, okay, Zach Kelly is your eighth inning guy, and he's already pitching in the seventh inning. So how is this going to work? And it turned out you didn't have that guy. You didn't have Slayton, and you didn't have Chris Martin. So anyway.
And now imagine tonight. So let's say history repeats itself. You get a 1-0 game going into the seventh inning. Zach Kelly threw 30 pitches yesterday.
Right.
You can't with the state of the bullpen right now, you can't justify subtracting from it. At least before, you could make the argument that they had a lot of depth. But that's just not the case anymore. Unless they straight up fall out, if they lose, what are there, 10 games, 9 games until the deadline? Unless they lose, all but one of those games or something crazy, there's just, you can't justify trading Kenley Jansen. There's no way he's anywhere but Boston.
All right, it's that time where I didn't ask you for a fake trade, but I want you to, I know you have a power ranking, you have a list of players that you think might be perfect fit for the Red Sox. You don't have to give up who you don't have to say, hey, here's a fake trade, here's the who says no. I just want to know, Gordo, what realistic player you think would be, or players would be great fits when the rubber meets the road, when we land at that time, which is a trade deadline, when we see the Netflix documentary that you're hoping that they are talking about this guy or that guy, that secured this guy or that guy. Gordo, who do you want on the Red Sox at the trade deadline?
Well, it's funny you bring up the Netflix aspect of it, because if maybe the perfect one of the perfect fits, there are a few guys that the Red Sox could get that would really fit in well, but one of the guys that would fit in perfectly would also fit in perfect for the Netflix doc is Justin Turner.
Mm.
If and it's crazy because a lot of the best fits for the Red Sox are in the AL East. I know maybe the Blue Jays are going to listen on Chris Bassitt. Yusei Kikuchi makes sense. Zach Eflin with the Rays makes sense. But Justin Turner, both in terms of they need a right-handed bat. They need a right-handed bat that is going to be okay playing less, which I think is a dynamic that not a lot of people consider. And he's a leader, a guy that I don't want to say this team lacks, because they've certainly made it far without that veteran on the offensive side of the ball, save for Rob Refsnyder, like the guy who plays every day and has had that long career. That's a guy that Justin Turner was for this team last year. I said they needed to keep. They didn't keep. They need the right-handed bat. To me, he fits perfectly. I would love to see the Red Sox go out and reacquire that guy.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. Like, a lot of people say, oh, Justin Turner, because you're familiar with him, and people like him, and he did a lot for the team, and it's just easy. And a lot of time, easy isn't right. But in this case, it's hard to argue that it isn't right. It really is. I mean, for the player that you need, because, Gordo, you did a great job of articulating exactly why Justin Turner is a great guy, to get. Right-handed bat is what they need. Position that he plays, you know, platoon with Yoshida, whatever it is. And the other part about this, Gordo, is that you're dropping in a guy into the clubhouse, which you got to make sure that he's the right guy. Like, this is another part of this equation. And everyone will tell you this. When you go back to Kyle Schwarber, when Kyle Schwarber was acquired, it was, remember, he had the bad hamstring. He didn't play for the first couple of weeks. But I was talking, I think, you know who I was talking to? Tim Hires in Texas, the former hitting coach of the Red Sox. And he was telling me about how in those 2 weeks, what a difference Kyle Schwarber made for those hitters and that team leading up to when he actually played the game. And, like, we forget about that. You're dropping a guy in, and he has to be the right fit in that clubhouse. And I don't think anyone would argue that Justin Turner, off of what we've seen last year, is universally liked in that clubhouse, universally respected in that clubhouse, and it also potentially is a much-needed veteran voice on the position side of things, which they might not have right now.
It's rare that you can look at a trade candidate and have evidence and proof that he would be such a seamless fit into a team. And we're just talking off the field there. This is a guy who still, obviously, his numbers this year are not what they were last year, but still has an 812 OPS against lefties. In June, like, it's obviously his May was really bad, but in June had a 914 OPS in 22 games. So a guy who's trending in the right direction, a guy who fits the role that you need, a guy who can hit left-handed pitching,
yeah,
and a guy
by the way,
the clubhouse would be thrilled to get back in.
Right, and we haven't even talked, you know, we're talking about clubhouse, we're talking about right-handed bat. How about first base? I mean, first base is because at this point, you can't count on Tristan Casas for another month, maybe even more, to be honest with you. Like, that's how it feels.
It's a dynamic I hadn't considered for a while, but, I mean, how can you not?
Right.
And so Casas is not going to be back before the deadline. He's not going to be back for probably a while after it. You might need a guy, like, because I keep thinking platoon DH with Yoshida, it might be the guy who can platoon first base with Dom Smith.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can platoon. Well, I mean, you want to play Refsnyder in the outfield, whatever. But really, when it comes to first base, for those people who know who Dom Smith is, and evidently not everybody knows who Dom Smith is. So for those people who know who Dom Smith is, he's been a nice story. He fills in a gap. He has filled in a gap. He's gotten better as he's gone on. He's a likable guy. He's liked in that clubhouse. Great. Outstanding. But now that we know that you might have to ride him out here for a little bit longer than you thought you would, then you have to cover your bases. You cannot expose Dom.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't be left out. Baseball Isn't Boring on WEEI.
Boston's sports original.
All right, let's go. Home stretch. Baseball's a boring show. We're with you every single Saturday. I love it. And I'm so honored and so privileged to have Gordo of the Play Tessie podcast alongside. Gordo, you feel
beautiful
good?
Beautiful day for baseball, as
is
always.
What is the weather in Boston like right now?
I spent the early afternoon at the pool. It's like mid-80s. I mean, it was supposed to be kind of cloudy, but it's pretty much been sunny the whole day. Pretty perfect.
Well, I can tell you this. The Los Angeles weather amazes me. And I know that you have some grayness, I guess, in May or June. It is unbelievable how you come out here and it's the same weather every single time. It's a little hotter. It's a little hotter. The one time, Gordo, which I did not get the typical L.A. weather, was a game in Anaheim. I think it was one of the only rainouts they ever had. They had a rainout, and then that day they brought in the helicopter. They brought in a helicopter to dry the field because I don't know if they had a tarp, but a helicopter lands in the field.
So what? It just doesn't rain?
It never rains. Never rains.
So how do? Oh, you know what? I do hear about these California droughts. I guess that's a thing.
This is quite a scene here, and I would just looking down the field. Kenley Jansen is a man of the people. I mean, he has been holding court. The fans, the Dodgers teammates, it's a whole scene. It's a whole scene. Which it was interesting because I was talking to some Dodgers people about Kenley and they said it'd be interesting to see the reception that he gets. Because when he left here, it wasn't really great. It wasn't going great for Kenley. And
Are you talking about on the field or with the organization?
Yeah, I mean, just sort of the perception of him, and the perception of that he hadn't really been that lockdown closer that they wanted. He goes back to the World Series. He didn't close out the World Series, as we know. But I do think that this is a guy who has evolved and landed in a pretty good place. And as we talked about before, Gordo, the trade deadline, I think this is going to be the most interesting part of the trade deadline, Kenley Jansen. What do you say? What say you, Gordo, about where Kenley Jansen on July 30th at 6 o'clock, let's say 6 o'clock, July 30th. I think the deadline's at 4, July 30th. Which, by the way, it's a little bit earlier this year.
Why is that?
I don't know. I have no idea. But it is. And so where on that time and day will Kenley Jansen be?
Kenley Jansen will be with the Red Sox, and to me there's really no doubt in my mind. If you wanted to get cute with it, you could have made an argument for it, and I entertained the argument for the whole buy-sell thing a couple weeks ago, but at this point, it really doesn't even have as much to do with the Red Sox position in the standings. They're in a wild card spot. They're playing such good baseball. If you want to look at the playoff odds, they've been riding at or above 50%. But to me, it's about the state of the bullpen. With the injuries they have,
Last night was an eye opener. I mean, last night was an eye opener. Not because, listen, Freddie Freeman's going to give up. He's going to hit his home runs. Shohei Ohtani, he hits one down the line, whatever. But last night was an eye opener because you said it before, Gordo, about we were all looking at the lineup, how this was setting up and what they were going to do. And I'm looking at it as like, okay, Zach Kelly is your eighth inning guy, and he's already pitching in the seventh inning. So how is this going to work? And it turned out you didn't have that guy. You didn't have Slayton, and you didn't have Chris Martin. So anyway.
And now imagine tonight. So let's say history repeats itself. You get a 1-0 game going into the seventh inning. Zach Kelly threw 30 pitches yesterday.
Right.
You can't with the state of the bullpen right now, you can't justify subtracting from it. At least before, you could make the argument that they had a lot of depth. But that's just not the case anymore. Unless they straight up fall out, if they lose, what are there, 10 games, 9 games until the deadline? Unless they lose, all but one of those games or something crazy, you can't justify trading Kenley Jansen. There's no way he's anywhere but Boston.
All right, it's that time where I didn't ask you for a fake trade, but I want you to, I know and you have a power ranking, you have a list of players that you think might be perfect fit for the Red Sox. You don't have to give up who you don't have to say, hey, here's a fake trade, here's the who says no. I just want to know, Gordo, what player, realistic player, you think would be, or players, would be great fits when the rubber meets the road, when we land at that time, which is a trade deadline, when we see the Netflix documentary that you're hoping that they are talking about this guy or that guy, the secured this guy or that guy. Gordo, who do you want on the Red Sox at the trade deadline?
Well, it's funny you bring up the Netflix aspect of it, because if maybe the one of the perfect fits, there are a few guys that the Red Sox could get that would really fit in well, but one of the guys that would fit in perfectly would also fit in perfect for the Netflix doc is Justin Turner.
Mm.
And it's crazy because a lot of the best fits for the Red Sox are in the AL East. I know maybe the Blue Jays are going to listen on Chris Bassitt. Yusei Kikuchi makes sense. Zach Eflin with the Rays makes sense. But Justin Turner, both in terms of they need a right-handed bat. They need a right-handed bat that is going to be okay playing less, which I think is a dynamic that not a lot of people consider. And he's a leader, a guy that I don't want to say this team lacks, because they've certainly made it far without that veteran on the offensive side of the ball, save for Rob Refsnyder, like the guy who plays every day and has had that long career. That's a guy that Justin Turner was for this team last year. I said they needed to keep. They didn't keep. They need the right-handed bat. To me, he fits perfectly. I would love to see the Red Sox go out and reacquire that guy.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. Like, a lot of people say, oh, Justin Turner, because you're familiar with him, and people like him, and he did a lot for the team, and it's just easy. And a lot of time, easy isn't right. But in this case, it's hard to argue that it isn't right. It really is. I mean, for the player that you need, because, Gordo, you did a great job of articulating exactly why Justin Turner is a great guy to get. Right-handed bat is what they need. Position that he plays, you know, platoon with Yoshida, whatever it is. And the other part about this, Gordo, is that you're dropping in a guy into the clubhouse, which you got to make sure that he's the right guy. Like, this is another part of this equation. And everyone will tell you this. When you go back to Kyle Schwarber, when Kyle Schwarber was acquired, it was, remember, he had the bad hamstring. He didn't play for the first couple of weeks. But I was talking, I think, you know who I was talking to? Tim Hyers in Texas, the former hitting coach of the Red Sox. And he was telling me about how in those 2 weeks, what a difference Kyle Schwarber made for those hitters and that team leading up to when he actually played the game. And, like, we forget about that. You're dropping a guy in, and he has to be the right fit in that clubhouse. And I don't think anyone would argue that Justin Turner, off of what we've seen last year, is universally liked in that clubhouse, universally respected in that clubhouse, and it also potentially is a much-needed veteran voice on the position side of things, which they might not have right now.
It's rare that you can look at a trade candidate and have evidence and proof that he would be such a seamless fit into a team. And we're just talking off the field there. This is a guy who still, obviously, his numbers this year are not what they were last year, but still has an 812 OPS against lefties. In June, like, it's obviously his May was really bad, but in June had a 914 OPS in 22 games. So a guy who's trending in the right direction, a guy who fits the role that you need, a guy who can hit left-handed pitching.
Yeah,
and
a guy by the
way, the clubhouse would be thrilled to get back in.
Right, and we haven't even talked, you know, we're talking about clubhouse, we're talking about right-handed bat. How about first base? I mean, first base is because at this point, you can't count on Tristan Casas for another month, maybe even more, to be honest with you. Like, that's how it feels.
It's a dynamic so, I hadn't considered for a while, but, I mean, how can you not?
Right.
And so Casas is not going to be back before the deadline. He's not going to be back for probably a while after it. You might need a guy, like, because I keep thinking platoon DH with Yoshida. It might be the guy who can platoon first base with Dom Smith.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can platoon. Well, I mean, you want to play Refsnyder in the outfield, whatever. But really, when it comes to first base, for those people who know who Dom Smith is, and evidently not everybody knows who Dom Smith is. So for those people who know who Dom Smith is, he's been a nice story. He fills in a gap. He has filled in a gap. He's gotten better as he's gone on. He's a likable guy. He's liked in that clubhouse. Great. Outstanding. But now that we know that you might have to ride him out here for a little bit longer than you thought you would, then you have to cover your bases. You cannot expose Dom Smith too much is what I'm saying. And that's where Turner comes in, because I understand that Romy Gonzalez can play first base, but he's not a first baseman.
Well, guess what, Rob? Even if he does play first base, you open up another hole, because last night Romy Gonzalez played, I believe, shortstop. So
yeah.
if Romy plays First, that means you're now playing David Hamilton against lefty. He doesn't hit lefties very well. If you play Romy at short, you're going to play Dom Smith against the lefty. He's obviously not as good against lefties. And if you want, you could DH Yoshida and maneuver that way. But again, he hasn't hit lefties very well. If you get the bat in Justin Turner, that covers that base right there. You don't have those guys playing.
And can we be honest? And this is the other thing that people get twisted about the trade deadline. And we've said this before, Gordo. You don't have to give up a lot. I mean, you don't have to give up a lot.
Especially if you take on the money, too.
Oh,
yeah. You may even be able to get them to eat money and still not give up very much.
It's Justin Turner. This is Steve Pierce Redux. And I mean, Santiago Espinal, good for you. You made the All-Star game. Great, super. But even that, Santiago Espinal is more than you would have to give up, because when you did that deal, you did the deal, I think, on June 29th.
Right, that was like an early one.
That's always going to cost more. So with Justin Turner, it's what, you know, find the guy. They're going to find a guy that they like. And just don't. Here's another thing, Gordo. Don't overvalue the players. We don't know about like how these guys feel. We don't know how Breslow acts. We don't know how he reacts. We don't know any of this. So what we know is that you shouldn't overvalue players. Pick the guys that you feel are tradable and trade them. And maybe that's Nick York. I don't know. Like, maybe that is. You have to make that decision too. What is Nick York? Is Nick York going to be a viable option at second base? Because if he is, then just say it. He's competing with Vaughn Grissom. Because before, Vaughn Grissom was the guy, no questions asked, he's our second baseman of the future. If that's changed, then fine. If it hasn't changed, then trade Nick York.
And if you're open to trading Nick York, that opens up a whole – because obviously Nick York – You would be able to get a lot more than Justin Turner for Nate. Like, you should not.
Oh,
be
yeah, yeah. I'm not saying trading. Yeah, yeah.
But, like, the Blue Jays, as I just said before, like, they've got other guys, Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi. Like, this could be a package deal. You could kill two birds with one stone if you see Nick York as the guy who's blocked in this organization. Not to say that you don't think he can be a major league player or an impact major league player, but if he's blocked, then you'd be doing yourself a disservice to not fill holes now. And yeah, potentially down the road, but if you get like a Bassett.
You don't. Here's the thing, Gordo. Don't feel like you have to win the trade by 80%.
Right.
And don't overvalue guys. Like, I heard the screaming and yelling. I think it was the Hansel Robles Big Fudge deadline, otherwise known as the Kyle Schwarber deadline. And they were pounding their chest about, well, we held on to Brandon Walter. Everyone doesn't understand how good Brandon Walter is. Okay. Like, Brandon Walter, nice guy. But, you know, it wouldn't have killed them to trade Brandon Walter. But they were making Brandon Walter out to be the be-all, end-all. They were making this out to holding on to Rafael Devers in the Chris Sale trade. So don't get sucked into that. So anyway.
With hindsight, that's really funny.
Well, it's true.
We kept Brandon Walter. Let's go. Right,
but I mean, that's the thing. But that's what Dombrowski was really good at. He's like, yeah, you know what? Jalen Biggs, okay. Yeah, he might be a major leaguer. Fine. But it's worth it. Is he going to be a major leaguer that hurts you? Is he going to be a major leaguer that's part of the foundation? Is he going to be a major leaguer that's part of a rotation? No.
And that's what the Sox have a lot of is guys right now who are on the cusp of the bigs. Like, whether it be in a Nick York role where it's like he hasn't made his debut, but that's like at least coming. Or it could be Emmanuel Valdez, who has played in the majors and has shown that he can hit big league pitching, at least from the right side. And has shown upside.
And what is he? What is he going to be? What is it? Where is he
going to
fit?
Is he going to hurt you if you trade him in the division? That's the question.
He's going to hit a home run against the Red Sox at some point.
It's going to be
everyone's going to be like freaking out, and then I'll go away, and then you'll look up a little while later. You know, like it'll be like, you know, hitting .210 with a .690 OPS.
It's
anyway,
like Santiago Espinal. It's like like he made the All-Star team, but even if Steve Pierce wasn't the All-Star Game MVP, like how great was Santiago Espinal? Like, he's just been Espinal.
And, you know, Kyle Schwarber trade, all of it. All right. Real quick, let's go to Rick in New Hampshire. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Hello, how are you?
Good.
First of all, baseball ain't boring.
Thank you. Oh, I like that. That's the alternative slogan. Baseball ain't boring.
Wait, yeah,
right?
we should make some alternative stickers.
Yeah.
And it's a big game tonight, and I hope the Sox ease my worried mind about a second half. Not a great second half, but what I want to ask you is, does Trevor Story have any trade value, because to me, you know, Don Smith might be a nice story, but to me, story is a sad story and the end of the story. And can he go?
And Rick, thanks for the call. The answer is no. No. I mean, first of all, he's hurt. He's basically out for the year. He makes a ton of money. Even when he comes back, he has to prove he can play. By the way, he makes a ton of money.
Several years, too. It's not like it's expiring after this or next year. He's got 3 years to
go. Speaking of baseballs and boring, I talked to you about the All-Star game. And, you know, we've had some signature moments with the baseballs and boring brand in recent weeks and months. And Noah Kahn and Derek White and Alex Cooper and all these people. But I got to tell you, Gordo, and I think we talked about this offline, was the Luis Arraez thing was like, I was blown away by it.
That was so cool. You got to tell the story.
Yeah, so I go up to – a lot of times I go up to players and I give them a baseballs and boring sticker. This, but, you know, because it helps break the ice, or maybe just because, you know, people like stickers. And I go up to Luis Arraez and I extend the sticker to him and he waves me off. He's like, no, no, no. And he reaches in his back pocket and he pulls out a baseballs and boring sticker. Now, I don't remember giving him one. Maybe I did a couple weeks ago, whatever. But the point is that Luis Arraez, one of the best hitters, the guy that Rich Hill said is the best hitter that he's ever seen, carries around a baseballs and boring sticker in his uniform back pocket all the time as a reminder. And that's exactly what we want. This is, yes, we have the podcast. Yes, we have the show. Yes, we have the T-shirts. Yes, we have the book. We have all of this. But this is why, you know, this is the heart and soul of it. And that was such a great moment. I'm not going to lie. It was such a great moment for me, Gordon.
It's the mission, Rob. He knows that he has the message. He has to keep it with him at all times. He gets it.
Well, and also Torrey Lovello put in his hat, much like he did for Game 2 of the World Series when he won. He put it in his hat, the sticker in his hat to manage the All-Star game.
I was hoping he was going to show it. You know when they do the hat tips when they do the intros?
Oh,
I thought there was a chance. I was watching for it.
I should have done that with somebody, though. Oh, man.
Could you imagine there's like four guys in a row? You get like all four of the reps from one team. They all just have the baseballs and boring sticker in their hat. They do the overextending hat tip that shows the sticker to the
camera. I am fascinated by the hat tip. I am fascinated by that dynamic. I'm fascinated by everything about that All-Star. You know, we talked about the draft. We talked about the futures game. We talked about, you know, we haven't even talked about the national anthem. Honestly, Gordo, the game itself, the home run derby itself, those didn't matter to me. Those didn't matter. Jaron Duran's suit meant a lot more than the actual game to me. So, yeah. You have a suit like that?
Like that? No. I got a custom suit for my wedding coming up, but it's certainly not that.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Could you imagine me wearing bright orange?
Why don't you do that for your bachelor parties in Texas, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks.
So wear the Jaron Duran suit. That
tell
has
Jaron
to be.
Duran to bring the suit to Texas and hand it off to me, and I'll wear it.
That has
I'll wear
to be
it in the heat.
That has to be a Halloween costume. I'm dressing up for Jaron Duran.
You got the aviator shades. You hold the jacket open.
Yeah, it's well, Gordo, we did it once again. We did it once again. It was a great show. I really appreciate you coming into the studio and talking about what's what. So always a good time. Thank you, my friend.
You enjoy L.A., Bradfo. Enjoy it.
Oh, I will. Zach, excellent job behind the glass. Once again, we're going to put Joe Castiglione's speech up online at BB. Isn't boring. Check that out. Now, we're getting ready. First pitch, Dodger Stadium. Tyler Murray, Lou Maloney. But before that, I got the pregame show with you. Bonus Bradfo, bonus Baseballs Boring. Be back in a little bit.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.